This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is the Skate Podcast on WEEI.com.
Bobby Orr, behind the net to Sanderson, Orr! Bobby Orr!
For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Talking Bruins and NHL.
Sure, old-time hockey. Like it is sure. Yeah.
With writer and producer Brian DeFelice.
Brian DeFelice is an emerging talent.
Bridget Prue.
Yeah. He's a little bit on the hot seat.
Burn him!
And WEEI.com Bruins writer Scott McLaughlin.
Great Scott!
Lace him up for some Bees talk right now.
I'm a damn dog!
It's the Skate Pod on WEEI.
Welcome into episode 58 of the Skate Podcast. I'm Brian DeFelice, joined by my line mates Scott McLaughlin and Bridget Prue. And since we last spoke, the NHL expansion draft for the Seattle Kraken took place, and the Bruins lost Jeremy Lauzon, as we all kind of figured would happen. And the NHL draft took place as well, and we last spoke with Chris Peters. Scott, insightful as ever, asked him who some blue-chip prospects could be that would follow the Bruins at 20, and Chris said Fabian Lysell, and that's exactly what happened. So we're going to mostly discuss what's going to happen with David Krejci and the upcoming free agency on July 28th. But we're going to start off with some opening takes on the Bruins draft selections. And I guess, Scott, you posed a question to Chris, so we'll start with you. How do you like the Bruins first-round selection?
I liked it. It seems like a good value pick. A lot of people had Lysell ranked in the top 15. Apparently there had been some whispers he might slip. There was like this odd thing about a character concern that sort of came up after he was picked. It seems like that was just he was in a situation with a team where he maybe didn't have the role he expected and didn't quite react the right way. Don Sweeney said the Bruins, you know, did their homework. They interviewed him about it, asked him about it, all that, and were satisfied with his answers and, you know, feel like he's a player who's already grown from it and will continue to. But, you know, look, what's one of the biggest criticisms of some of the Bruins' recent drafts? It's that they've gone conservative, you know, taking like the safe two-way player, maybe passed over some more skilled players at times. Well, that wasn't this pick. Fabian Lysell, definitely a skilled player. He's one of the best skaters in the draft, you know, has great hands. Look, I'm going mostly off, you know, scouts and other analysts. I'm not going to pretend that I watched a ton of Fabian Lysell playing in Sweden. But everything you read is that he's a high skill player. There are things he has to work on, you know, adjusting to playing against bigger, more mature players. He did struggle playing in Sweden's top league this past season. I think he had 3 points in 26 games. So he's going to have to figure that out. So there's work to do. And I think any player you draft at 20, or I guess technically 21st, but really it was the 20th player off the board, there's going to be work. You know, you're not getting slam dunk players who are going to walk into the NHL in day one at that point. So Lysell has some developing to do, but I like the pick. I like that it was a skilled player because that's something the Bruins need in their prospect pool.
Yeah, and you say he's not going to jump right onto the roster. This draft didn't have very many players that are going to jump right onto
the number one
NHL
overall
roster.
Pick probably isn't. Owen Power's probably going back to Michigan for his sophomore season.
Exactly. So Brian and I were kind of talking about it before the podcast, just that this is a relatively weak draft in terms of depth and in terms of star power. So, yeah, it was more important about the scouting. And a lot of people had this guy going a lot higher than where he ended up getting drafted. And I don't think the character concerns, like, so we saw some really bad character concerns come up in this draft.
Hello, Montreal.
Yes, hi, Montreal. We're talking to you. But this isn't one of them, right? Because a kid who's expecting to play and he's not necessarily getting the minutes, and we all know someone like this, right? We all played with someone like this. Once in a while, they'd start throwing a fit because they weren't getting enough time or weren't playing where they wanted to. But that's not something
that's
guys
Brian when he doesn't talk enough during the podcast.
He's looking at me right now about to bitch about it. But so that's not really something I see as a concern, just because you're obviously not expecting to come right into the league and take over for, you know, the Bruins. Like, you're not expecting to take over on the top line for the Bruins. Like, you know you have to work your way up the ladder. Whether or not he needs an attitude adjustment, maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. I think that it was, like, overblown, most likely.
It seemed that way, yeah.
So I don't even know if that's something to worry about, but the way that the headlines read and the way that ESPN kind of just, like, briefly mentioned it and didn't go into too much detail was kind of, like, kind of threw him under the bus in a time where character concern usually means something a lot worse than what it turns out to be for him. So I highly doubt we're going to deal with that as an issue. And it, you know, as people mature, they kind of lose that mentality that they're, you know, getting the short end of the stick all the time. So I think it's a good pick. Scott, you kind of covered the fundamental reasons why it's a good pick for the Bruins, and maybe it's a little bit to shut people up about the whole skill situation. So I think it's a good pick for them. I think they got a little bit lucky that he fell to them. Brian, how about you?
The only thing I was hoping for was that they didn't draft a defenseman. And even if I kind of brought it up with Chris last podcast, and when I said, do you take the best player available or positional needs? And if the best player available was a defenseman and the Bruins took that player, I understand it, but it's just not their biggest need right now. And so obviously I think they need to stockpile a centerman. I think three centers consecutively got drafted before the Bruins picked Lysell. So, you know, if the draft wasn't that deep at the center ice position, then I'm not going to be too upset they didn't take a center. I'm definitely glad that they improved, you know, their prospect system with somebody who has a lot of promise and skill. And I think that the idea of having Pastrnak and Lysell as your, you know, one and two right wings for years to come is pretty promising. As for his production in the Swedish Elite League, you know, obviously Austin Matthews is a generational talent, but like his draft year, he was playing against men and he certainly had a great season, but like his points weren't through the roof like they were in the NHL. So I just keep that in mind when you're looking at him in the Swedish Elite League. Like sometimes when you're playing a man's game as a 17-year-old, sometimes, you know, the experience is better than the point production that somebody could get in the OHL or USHL or one of these junior programs, or even the NCAA. Again, like you see some kids, they're playing against men, so sometimes like their points aren't there and the schedule's lower or less games, but
And let's not forget, this was a COVID season. This was a very weird season for people, and we saw even players in the NHL struggle a little bit mentally with production and just kind of wrapping their head around what they need to do. It's just a different atmosphere for people. So you also kind of take that into consideration. I mean, think about the 2019 Red Sox. Like, that season you throw into the garbage, because this year they're totally different. So sometimes teams are and players are affected differently by that. And if you're the Bruins, you hope that there was a little bit of that factoring in.
And some of those overseas teams were deeper this year because of COVID canceling other leagues or delaying other leagues. You know, more players went to or stayed in leagues that were actually playing. So I don't know all the details of Lilia's roster where he played, other than Jesper Wallstedt was the team's goalie, and he went one pick in front of Lysell. But, you know, it could have been that maybe he would have been a second liner on that team in a normal season, but he's even lower because, you know, guys who were there last year didn't move on to other leagues, or someone came over and that wouldn't have gone there, things like that.
That's a good point.
One thing about Lysell that it's very apparent when you listen to him on Zoom, and you probably were a part of the conference call, Scott, was he's very, very confident. He described himself as, I don't know if it was dynamic or, but it was some sort of adjective that was like,
yeah,
okay,
that always interests me, the way that people describe themselves.
But you need that though. You need some confidence,
yeah,
you know?
I'm like a proponent of just like, it's impossible for me to like describe myself. It's impossible for me to like say nice things about myself. It's just so weird to hear people be like, I'm the best. Like,
well, it was weird. It was, like, interesting to hear, because I ended up including, like, a lot of those quotes in the write-ups I did for WEI.com. But, like, all of the Bruins picks were asked to describe their game, which is understandable because, like, you know, none of us on this Zoom call have really watched them play. Maybe if they went to a college around here, we've seen them or whatever. But so, like, it's useful for us just to get an idea of what they think of their game. And they get asked that during, like, their interviews with teams, too. Like, they're asked to, like, describe themselves, describe their games. You know, what kind of player
pitch
do you want to be? Like, all they're asked, like, all that stuff. But it is interesting to hear because, like, they always, you know, that they're all confident, as they should be. Like, look, you just got drafted by an NHL team. You should be pretty confident. But it's also, like, they all describe themselves as, you know, good two-way player. I like to score, but I also, like, take pride in my defense. And it's like, you know, they're not all good two-way players.
Those are just the right things to say.
Yeah.
So after they picked Lysell, they did draft two centermen, a goaltender, two defensemen, and then a forward, it says. So I guess that's somebody who's just diverse. I don't really know. I've never seen that.
Yeah, Oscar Jelvik. I think he was listed as like a center or a left wing.
Yeah. So any of those names worth bringing up real quick? I know the Brett Harrison kid, people were saying, just kind of gets a job done, isn't flashy, and may have been a first-round talent or could have been, but wasn't.
Yeah, so a lot of people had him ranked on the 50s and 60s. So even, you know, after essentially an off season, because he's in the OHL with the Oshawa Generals, OHL didn't play this past season. He went over to Finland and played, I think, like a dozen games or so there. And then he also played in the U18 Worlds. But there were people who thought that he was maybe on track for like a breakout OHL season this year. And obviously they didn't play. So he's someone who certainly could have risen, you know, maybe if he took advantage of that. But as it is, teams just didn't get a good enough look at him this season. He ends up dropping to the third round. If he goes back to the OHL and has that kind of breakout season, then that's going to look like a really good pick for the Bruins. And it certainly sounds like he at least has the skill set to potentially do that. So that looked like a pretty good value pick. And then further down in the draft, the two defensemen they took, Ryan Mass in the sixth round and Ty Gallagher in the seventh, Bob McKenzie had Ryan Mast as an honorable mention on his top 100 list, and he ended up falling all the way to the sixth round. He's a big kid, big defenseman, you know, really shut down type, but apparently has, you know, is a pretty good skater, has a little bit of offense to his game, and has really bulked up because there were scouting reports that listed him at like 6'4", 190, which, you know, that's kind of scrawny, really spindly.
Yeah.
He's now up to 215, so, like, he has put on some mass. No pun intended, Ryan mass. And then Ty Gallagher, that they took in the seventh, he's heading to BU this fall. And
Near and dear to Scott's heart.
That's right. Set the U.S. development program record for goals by defensemen. And there was another ranking, I believe it was Scott Wheeler of The Athletic, had him in his top 100, and they ended up getting him in the seventh round. So,
well, the good thing about people in Boston is they can really get a good look at him this year.
Yep.
So they can, I mean, you can head on down, watch some BC and BU games. And
well, so Andre Gasso, their seventh round pick, he clarified that he's actually going to Fargo in the USHL this season, then he'll be a freshman at BC next year. So he's a year away from being around here, but
it's nice to actually be able to see the prospects develop, and like your Matt Grizzlicks and your Charlie McAvoy's in the area. And Scott, you'll be there, I'm sure.
Yep.
They took, I might butcher his name, but Philip Svedback, the goalie.
Sounds close enough.
In the I'll go with that. So they took him with a fourth round pick. Are you surprised they took a goalie in the fourth round or a goalie at all in this draft? They seem like they're pretty stocked at the goaltender position, unless maybe they were in a position where they had to waive Vladar and he got picked up or something like that.
Which is a possibility.
It is. I think it's Svedbach's going to be several years away, so I think it's more just organizational depth. They hadn't drafted a goalie in a few years. I think Swayman was probably the last, and that was 2017. So you're looking at like the, you know, you have like those guys in that. Vladar's a little older. Swayman and Kyle Kaiser are kind of around the same age. But then, like, you didn't have any 18, 19, 20-year-old goalie prospects. So I think just this kind of just helps replenish that a little bit, and now you at least have someone in sort of like that next wave of what it, you know, 3-4 year increments or whatever.
So now we want to head over into the center talk. Because
yes.
this is like,
gets juicy.
I spent all day like looking at numbers and contracts and available players, and there's only, so in terms of if Krejci doesn't come back, which I still think he's the Bruins' best option to come back, and I'll explain why as we get a little bit further into this, but I was having a hard time finding a player with a contract that actually fits a second line skill set. And Scott and I were talking a little bit about this before we came in here, which is, well, you had your eyes on Deneau, and he would come in at a reasonable contract. So I guess we can talk about him a little bit later. I have a few guys I want to ask you, like, yay or nay.
Wait, who do you have his eyes on?
Philip Deneau.
Who?
Philip Deneau from Montreal.
Oh, you don't. Oh, okay. I thought you said you don't know who he had his eyes on. You're like, he has his eyes on Deneau. So
Deneau.
I just want to clarify who you're talking about.
So, I guess
this is like a who's on first routine.
Yeah, Scott, it's French,
Scott,
guys. It's French.
Scott
okay.
Likes, Scott likes Deneau.
Deneau.
Anyway.
All right, we're gonna have to work on the French with you, Brian, a little bit. But so
I had a B in French all through high school. So
you did well.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you pronounce my last name?
Prue.
Prox?
Prue. I never once mispronounced Prue.
Okay, so I guess first place to start, if you want to go here first, I think Krejci's about to ask for like almost what he got last time. I think he still thinks he's worth upwards of $6 million a year. And I think he's probably asking closer to $7 million. Based off of the fact that they don't seem to be very close right now. I think the Bruins are looking for him to sign for six or under, but he currently, I assume, thinks that he deserves, maybe not even with the Bruins, somewhere between $6 and $7 million a year.
I mean,
like the contract,
it's hard to get a gauge on even like where contract talks might be or if they've even really gotten into details, because, you know, look, I mean, Sweeney could be bluffing, but he told the media on Thursday, so we're recording this Monday evening. So 4 days ago, Sweeney told the media that Krejci has not given them a clear indication yet if he wants to play in Boston next year, or presumably the alternative is to go home to the Czech Republic, which Krejci has said he wants to do at some point. So you have to have that answer before you can even really get into the nitty-gritty of contract. And I don't know what Krejci would be looking for. He said after the season that his next deal wouldn't be about money. Obviously, we know all contracts are to some extent about money. So, you know, it's not like the Bruins are just going to be like, here's $2 million. And he'd be like, okay, great, thank you.
People can say it's not about money, but it's about value, right? It's about where they value themselves. And they want to get what they deserve. Like, it's not about money per se, but sometimes when you take a lesser contract, you feel like they don't think of you like the way that you view yourself or the way that you deserve to be looked at.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you can get Krejci for less than six. Like, I think they'd probably end up somewhere around five. It's just my guess.
But I think he's coming into this conversation saying 6.5.
Maybe. What I could see him saying is, hey, Taylor Hall just got $6 million a year.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did this together. Like, we helped each other. We were both a big part of this line's success once he got here. I want $6 million like him. Like, I could see that argument, but I can't imagine him getting close to what his previous contract was.
Now, Brian, question for you. In this situation, in my view, the leverage is in Krejci's camp, right? He has a lot of things going for him right now that lets him pull a little bit more money if he wants it.
Well, the leverage is now in his hands a little bit because of the addition of Taylor Hall. Like, now Krejci and his representation can go to the Bruins and say, look what I've done with the adequate, like, star top six winger on my line. So whereas before Taylor Hall, he didn't have much of a leg to stand on. I think for Krejci, if he wants to go back home and the Bruins don't want him on a long-term deal, he's probably sitting there saying, like, okay, well, if you're not going to meet me on my years, I want my AEV to be significantly higher than what I'm not going to stay for like for a year, $1.5 million, $2 million. Like that's not worth it for me.
Yeah, like a 2-year deal, 6.5 or something like that.
See, I think that's I think that's what he can't be your highest paid forward. It can't happen. So like if the basically
not after he just had that whole long contract being the highest paid when he didn't really deserve it.
Yeah, but look at the contract with Coyle. Obviously that's a bad contract, but it's $5.25 million. So you think he's going to take less than the third line center? Because I mean he may have to, but when you look at it in comparison to some of these other centers in the league. He actually, like, there's plenty of centers in this league getting paid more than Krejci that are not as good.
Krejci's coming. Scott, sure. how long was Krejci's deal at, like, 7 a year? It was, like, a 6 or 7 year deal, right? Krejci's made his money more than anybody on the Bruins, especially up front, over the years. And I think that he's a veteran who understands now that he wants to still...
Yeah, it was a six-year, $43.5 million contract, cap hit of... Well, it started out as 7.25 and it faded down to 7
and
a year.
And to be frank, and you can blame it on a lack of line mates, but he hasn't lived up to that value for the majority of his contract. So if he wants to sit there and win a championship, I think he's smart enough, he's veteran enough to understand he's going to have to take a cut. And I think the Bruins don't want to give him too many years. The Bruins are probably looking at...
2 to 3.
I'd probably say two. Probably two. And I think both sides should sit there and agree on 2 years at $4.5 million, give or take a year, and let bygones be bygones. Try and win a championship and go on your way. You've made your money. Now we're all trying to be on the same page to win a championship here. That's what I think. And I don't know if it doesn't happen, and that's a shame.
I have a few other reasons why I think he kind of comes in with the leverage, and one of them is just the fact that there's not many unrestricted free agents that are going to fit into a second line center role, and the chemistry thing with Hall, obviously a big one. I see him being able to negotiate if he wants to, but the question is, does he want to?
Well, I mean, we're going to have to get an answer really soon because free agency opens Wednesday at noon, and the Bruins, Don Sweeney said there's no timeline. He can say that publicly. That's fine. But like, realistically, you have to know if you're in the market for a second line center when free agency opens.
Like this,
because you like that's not a spot you can just wait on. You're not gonna be able to get a second line center in August, like sometime in August. You know, those guys are gonna come off the board quickly.
Thin. Yes, it's a thin group of centers this year. And the Bruins have $20 million of cap space, so obviously you have to think about their other needs and where they need to fill it. And some of these bigger name guys that are still available that haven't signed, like the Gabriel Landeskogs of the world, probably you're not going to be able to grab if you grab Krejci, because you'd be looking at, you know, $9 million you signed Landeskog or something.
That's supposedly
in that
what he's looking for, which I wouldn't go
near. You save $5 million or so for Krejci, you're not left with much to work with in terms of grabbing a defenseman or adding a depth forward.
Yeah, and the left shot defenseman market is getting pretty thin too. I know we're going to get into that, but yeah, I mean, if you're just looking at centers, like I said, Philip Danault is going to be the top name on the market. There's just before we started recording, there was a report that they might be interested in Ryan Getzlaff. To me, fine as a number three center, absolutely not as a number two center. Like I don't think he has enough left in the tank. He's 36 years old. He just had his worst season scoring wise. I don't think you can depend on him to come in and be your number two center. Paul Stastny's out there. He might still be a number two center. He still had a pretty good season last year. The Blackhawks didn't issue a qualifying offer to Pius Suter, which was pretty surprising because he had a really good breakout season. He could be a number two center. He probably enters into the same similar level as Danault, where they're going to be the top two and the other guys are going to get the longer-term deals. I think Suter's only 25. Those are the kind of players you're looking at. It's either you're going big for Danault or Suter, or...
Nick Bonino, say.
Yeah, Nick Bonino has been a really good number three center his whole career.
But here's the problem. But that's it. He's a number three center. You can come up with a lot of number three centers, but you can't come up with a number two centers. And the Bruins, I don't know if you guys agree, can't move Charlie Coyle into the number two center, which is why they paid him so much money and what they were expecting out of him. was to move him to number two.
Yeah, and hopefully his nagging injury last year will, and you know, he's getting that resolved in the offseason. Hopefully that explains his struggles last year. And I think
a lot
of people.
But he's still not a number two center.
No, he's not. But but hopefully he can get back to being a really good number three center.
That would be lovely.
And, you know, but as far as Getzlaf goes, Scott, for me, it would have to, the term and the money would have to be appropriate. Obviously, I don't want to overpay for him. But don't you think that, you know, the Bruins kind of have that culture like the Patriots do around the league, where like a player can go to that structure, that culture, and some of the high end talent, and be a lot better than what they were. Like Getzlaf wasn't playing with much in Anaheim. Could he go to Boston and put up like 50 points?
I feel like that's a steep ask for him.
Yeah,
I could see him getting to 40, like maybe half a point a game. Maybe he could still do that if he has Taylor Hall and Craig Smith on his wings.
Well, let's not forget he's a year older than Krejci. So one of the issues we have with Krejci is you know, that he's aging out of his prime. Getzlaf is going to have the same issue. And last season, he was a minus 14.
Well, he may be a year older, but the way he plays the game, he's probably like 5 years older. You know, he plays the game a little bit more of a brute style than Krejci does. So, Scott, if you had to look into your crystal ball, like what would you say happens with Krejci, you think?
All along, I thought he's back and they're going to figure something out. The fact that it's Monday evening and free agency opens on Wednesday and we still don't know, I feel like I'm leaning towards him being gone. And
I feel like the Krug situation all over again.
Yeah, kind of. Like, it's just odd. A player who's been here that long that, in theory, you should have a good relationship with and be talking to and open communication and all that, to just not have an answer yet is... I feel like it just doesn't bode well. You know, that said, look, maybe he's signed by the time we post this podcast. Like,
yeah.
That's the thing we were thinking about postponing it, you know, putting it back a little bit later in the week just in case we get this news. But obviously, if it happens, one free agency opens, we'll have another podcast and assess, you know, that situation. One more thing I want to get to about Krejci, I'll ask the question to Brian first. Do you think the fact that the Bruins, this has been a huge topic, the Bruins' aging core and the fact they maybe have a one-year window left. I think the organization thinks they have a 1 to 2 year window left. So don't you think that means they don't take a risk on one of these, so to say, third-line centers, bringing them in and not like signing Krejci if he comes to the table and wants to negotiate with them? Don't you think that makes it more likely they sign Krejci to a short-term deal because they know how he works with Hall, they know how he works in the organization, he's a specific style of player you can't find anywhere else. I think that makes them less likely to go out and look for someone else. They are going to try as best they can to bring Krejci back.
Unless Krejci flat out says, there's nothing you guys can offer me, I just want to go home, then there's nothing they can do.
Exactly.
Assuming that's
not the case.
Short of that, like Sweeney has to get something done because this is not rebuild mode. This is not, you know, be mediocre. Like every move they make this offseason has to be to make them a championship caliber team next year and likely the year after, because when Bergeron's no longer playing for them, like, you know, McAvoy and Pastrnak and some young players can certainly make them a bubble playoff team for a few years, but like the championship window will close until they get that next star center, which we don't know. And I just think that one thing of leverage that Krejci doesn't have that Sweeney does have is Krejci will not play. He's not going to sign with another NHL team. So like Sweeney knows that it's Czech Republic or Boston Bruins. That's in Sweeney's favor.
But
so,
still, like, is there a price that gets Krejci to say I'm not going to the Czech Republic? Do you know what I'm saying? Like for a certain price, he's like, whatever, I'll step away from the NHL.
Yeah.
But for the right price, it might entice him to say I'll wait 2 years.
I guess to quote the great Ted DiBiase, everybody's got a price. But so if Don Sweeney wants to make him the highest paid player in the league, I'm sure he'd stick around. But
give him a 12.5 like McDavid.
I don't see, Scott, after the money Krejci's made, especially over his counterparts who are better than him, Bergeron, Marchand, Pastrnak over the last few years. I don't see how Krejci could turn down 2 years at like 4.5, 5. You know what I mean?
And especially given that, again, he said after the season that his next deal wasn't going to be about money. That, to me, tells me that he understands he's getting a pay cut if he's back next year. So,
right. But do you think he's going to take a $3 million pay cut?
I mean, maybe, or close, seven.
Close to it. Two and a half. Like, yeah, I don't think 4.5, 5 is unreasonable. And if he's way over that and, like, not even entertaining coming down to something close to that, then
here,
I don't know. That's tough.
This is the problem. Like, Marchand and Pasternak are over a point per game player in the National Hockey League, and they're making mid sixes, low sixes, right? So how in what world can Krejci go to Don Sweeney as a 0.6 points per game player and say, I want the same range? You can't do it.
All I can say is uniqueness, fit with the team. He's his own style of player.
What? If he wants to handicap the organization he's played for 15 years and play hardball, then you know what? He can go back to the Czech Republic, because if he hamstrings them with a high value, like, and they can't go out and make the other moves to win a championship, which is the reason he has to stay in the first place or would want to stay in the first place, then shame on him. Honestly, like, but I feel like Sweeney should do everything he can to keep him, but it has to be reasonable. Yeah, you have the needs.
Think about the other spots they have to fill.
And I don't think, if Krejci wants to come back, I don't think his ask would be crazy. Like, I think at this point, it's just a legitimate question of whether he wants to be in Boston or the Czech Republic next year. And obviously, he needs to let the Bruins know soon. Look, one other center option I want to throw out there, because he emerged in a report late last week. We also got a question about him on Twitter. And that is Christian Dvorak from Arizona, who they would have to trade for. He signed for 4 more years at, I believe it's 4.25 per year. He played with Taylor Hall for a year when Hall was with the Coyotes. That Coyotes team wasn't particularly good.
Were they line mates or just on
the
same team?
Yeah, they were line mates for most of the season with Connor Garland on their right wing. And they had pretty good results, though, the two of them together. Or specifically, the three of them with Garland on the right. And I think, so I like Dvorak. I think he's sort of like on a championship team, I think he's kind of like a fringe second, third line center. But I think you could get by with him as your second line center if you have good enough wings, which at least on their second line, I think the Bruins do. And he's young. He might still continue to grow his game out. He's 25. I feel like that'd be like a good player to have. I think he would help you. I think it's a pretty decent contract. The question we got on Twitter is, what would you have to give up? The Coyotes are a team looking for prospects and picks. They're, you know, full on rebuild. They've been selling off pieces like crazy. They've been willing to take on bad contracts from teams. So I'm wondering if, like, as part of this deal, can you dump John Moore on them? Get rid of that contract. I don't know if you're even in the market to trade Jake DeBrusk anymore. The Bruins on Monday did not issue qualifying offers to Nick Ritchie or Andre Kasha, so you're a little thin on wing. I don't know if you're, you know, really looking to trade Jake DeBrusk and get even thinner there. But that would maybe be a team that would be interested in him if you were. So I don't know. What do you guys think about Dvorak, the idea of trading with the Coyotes in general?
That's not one of my top ones. I'll just say that. That's definitely not on the top of my list in terms of guys to target if you have to, in the case that you have to move on from Krejci. His cap hit is similar to what you guys were suggesting as what the Bruins would offer Krejci, which is 4.5. So that's obviously, you have to consider that, and who you're getting. Yeah, I don't see him as my top, and I do want to get into some of the other ones that are options in terms of free unrestricted free agents. Brian, do you have any opinion about Dvorak?
Well, Scott and I were talking about it earlier, and basically I said that he's not a championship number two center, and then Scott's response was, I agree. So they would have to have a really elite third line. And with the Ritchie and Kasha news that happened today, we have literally no idea like what their third line is going to look like next year besides Coyle. So like without knowing their third line, and it would have to be to go from not knowing their third line to having an elite third line come opening night or trade deadline, like, that's a huge, like, mystery. So if Dvorak is a piece of the puzzle, yep, at the right price, the right term, all that stuff, is as a number two center with an average third line, no, I'd rather, if I'm going to have a guy that's not going to get the job done ultimately, which is a championship, then I just throw Stendika up there because he's cheaper and your own property.
And I have an interesting idea about how they could bolster their second line and their third line at the same time, but we'll get to that later because I have a crack dream that Vladimir Tarasenko could end up on the Bruins if you handle this the right way. But Scott already tried to shut me down on that.
I've given up on Tarasenko. But look, so, I mean, I think Dvorak's better than Stanika. I think he's better than Coyle. Like, he would be your best number two center option if you got him. Obviously, yes, you would ideally like to find someone better. But again, as we already laid out, it's not like there's a ton of great number two centers sitting out there this offseason. So, you know, I just feel like you could do worse than a cost-controlled or, you know, fairly cost-controlled, like not a crazy contract. Locked up for his prime years, plays pretty much every situation, and has played with Taylor Hall before. Like, I think that would be solid. And on the third line, I'm really interested to see what happens with Richie, because they could negotiate with him again and try to get him back cheaper. He was due for a $2 million qualifying offer, but likely would have ended up around $3 million if he went to arbitration. So that's why they didn't qualify him, because they wanted to avoid arbitration. But to me, because I've kind of been beating this drum all along, like, I would move on from Richie because I'm looking for an upgrade in that spot. Like, if you're signing Nick Richie for even 2.5, he's a third line winger. Like, that's third line winger money. That's what he was last year. I just feel like he ended up as part of the problem last year, especially in the playoffs. I don't expect him to score at the rate that he did for parts of the season. A lot of that was on the power play. I feel like that's a spot where you can upgrade, and if you're upgrading that, potentially upgrading two spots on your third line, you know, we'll see how the offseason goes, then I'd be a little more comfortable with not having, like, a true bona fide, like, number two center, because while you would like to have that, you can win if your number two center is a little less than that. Like, the Blackhawks have done that before. They won a cup with Artem Anisimov as their number two center because they had really good wings around him. Vegas has made multiple deep runs, arguably without a number one center. Like, William Karlsson's really good. He's probably, you know, middle to lower pack number one center. This year, like, they had Chandler Stephenson centering their top line and worked out just fine because they had great wingers around him. So I think you can do it. I think you can make it work. And again, I like Dvorak as a player. So I would definitely keep that option on the table and wouldn't mind if that's ultimately what the Bruins end up doing.
I mean, in 302 career games, he's just under half a point per game player. So, like, as a player, like, that's a great player to have on your team. And, I just don't know, unless, like, we talked about, like, their third line was sick, as a second line center, I just don't know if he can get you to the promised land. That's my reservation about him. But I would love to have him in general as a piece of the puzzle for sure.
I got a few other ones that I'll give you just a little bit of information on. So Nick Bonino, who's 2 years younger than Krejci, he's 33. He's out there as an option. He's, you know, two-time Stanley Cup champion with the Pittsburgh Penguins. His last contract was $2.4 million.
Forget that he went to BU.
Yes, he did. I've interviewed him before. He's a pretty big guy. Him as a fit, say he goes for a little under 2.4. As I see him as more of a third line center, Scott.
Yeah, he'd be awesome as a third line center. He has been his whole career. He was the third line center on those back to back Penguins Stanley Cup teams. Has been effective everywhere he's gone. One of my signings in the mock off season that I did on WEI.com. And I had that with signing Bonino and bumping Coyle over to wing. I don't know if that's what I don't think the Bruins are planning to, like, I don't know if the Bruins are planning to sign a number three center and move Coyle over. Maybe they are. Maybe that's where the interest in Getzlaff comes from. But Yeah, so Bonino is a number three center, sure, but it certainly doesn't solve your number two center problem, because then you have two number three centers in Bonino and Coyle, and I still wouldn't be comfortable moving either one of them up in the lineup.
You know, one thing that we haven't talked about yet, but it's kind of the elephant in the room, is that the NHL is going to go back to their traditional playoff format next year, and that means the Bruins will have to go through their division. And, you know, Tampa won the Cup a month ago, and they've already lost Barclay Goodrow and Yanni Gourde. Those are two huge pieces. So, like, the
and
Bruins...
Blake Coleman. He's going to go elsewhere.
He was somebody that I was about to bring up.
He's a free agent, right?
Yeah,
he's a free
agent. And they can't afford him.
Right. So, like, the Bruins have a huge opportunity here to, like, go out there and get that advantage over Tampa. Because in the past, like, both teams have high-end skill. At
and
the
by the way,
line.
Tampa still has to trade another contract in addition to that just to get under the cap. So that's probably, like, they would prefer to be Tyler Johnson. We'll see if anyone is willing to, like, help them out and take that contract on.
Yeah.
Arizona, maybe.
I say nobody help.
Otherwise, it's like Alex Killorn or Andre Palat or maybe even Ryan McDonagh. I don't think it would be him, but... They still need to move one other contract, too. So the Lightning is still going to be really good next year, but they're definitely going to be weakened compared to
this year.
They'll
be a real good team, but it could be the Bruins division because, like, we just talked about Tampa's going to be – they're not going to be as good. And then, like, okay, I get it. You have the Stanley Cup finalists, Montreal Canadiens in the division. They won't be – they'll have a hard time making the playoffs. Maybe it's a wild card. Yeah. But you have Toronto will be there. The Bruins will be there. Tampa will be there. Ottawa, Detroit suck. I mean, Ottawa's getting better. The Panthers are a good team, but
they just traded for Sam Reinhardt too, so they just got better too.
Yeah. So, but the Bruins have an opportunity. They have to make these improvements, and it's not our job to do them. We're just speculating. But that's why, you know, I think it starts with Krejci. I really do.
It's hard to get into the other hypotheticals of who they're going to sign on the offensive side, because without that, you don't really know if you're going to be willing to go all in on someone or how much cap space you're going to have left. Because say you add a Blake Coleman, whose contract right now is a $1.8 million a year, or Philip Deneau, who's getting $3 million a year. Those are obviously lesser contracts. You have more room to sign maybe a bigger player.
But those two guys getting much bigger contracts.
Yeah, they're going to want their raises.
That is also true. But still, I don't think they're going to get as much as Krejci would have gotten.
Oh, I think Dano's getting over six. And I would guess Coleman's going to get 4.5.
Yeah,
five.
I would say Coleman's definitely going to get, I would say, four.
Philip Deneau is like a lot of people call him, and Scott, you may be one of them. I have, personally, I haven't watched enough of him to say this myself, but they say he's like the best defensive forward in the game. I still think the Bruins have that player, but
he's up there.
But he's
sure
up there, and he's younger. So if he wants to make the claim that he deserves to make 6+, he sure as hell has that claim. Krejci can no longer say that anymore. He's 34.
Yeah, I mean, they're different players too, and like that's the other thing is, like, what are you looking for? Because Krejci, I think Krejci's still a better offensive player than Dano. He's certainly a better playmaker. Dano might be a better all around player. But, like, you know, I mean, you have Bergeron as your number one center. Like, you already have one of the best two-way centers in the game. Obviously, you're not going to complain about having a second behind him. But it's a little bit different role. Like, then that's not like, an all-out offense line if Dano's a center on it.
Yeah, and I just find that there's too many question marks with an outside defenseman. Question marks on chemistry. Because as we've seen throughout Taylor Hall's career, well, first of all, his chemistry with Krejci was probably the best he's had. And we just don't know how he'll fit in with some of the other centers that they have as options. Because we've seen the results with Krejci, and they're almost considered to be like a pair in terms of the decision-making. But I know that Hall had mentioned something offhand one time in a post-game press conference about how he likes having a righty center. Because the way that the play develops... He's first of all said he never had a righty center before Krejci, and he said it opens up him better for getting open and getting his shots off, which I think is kind of an interesting tidbit that he said. And do you consider that in your addition of a center?
Ryan Getzlaf is a righty.
I do not, honestly, Scott, I do not think Getzlaf is coming to Boston.
Look, honestly, if Krejci doesn't re-sign with the Bruins, I think they're screwed. I agree.
That's why I say he has him right where he wants him.
If he re-signs, then the Bruins can go a ton of different options to fill out their bottom six. If he doesn't, they're in trouble as far as being able to have a Stanley Cup caliber team to start the season. Do we have any more forward things to talk about free agency wise? Do you want to hop into the defense?
Well, can I just briefly mention my wonderful dream in a perfect world?
Give your elevator pitch.
What the Bruins roster would look like if they were able to sign Krejci, first of all, and Vladimir Tarasenko. So because Tarasenko said he wanted out, he still has quite a bit left on his contract. And it's been rumored that that the East Division is where the most interest is in adding him. So in my mind, well, first of all, they're going to have to eat part of his contract so that the Bruins can have room for him to come over. Mm-hmm. But I imagine that they will take part of it because Tarasenko has a no trade clause, which means he's going to be the one who ends up deciding where he goes. And I don't see why he wouldn't want to come to Boston. And if he were to come here and he jumps in, he'd obviously slide back Craig Smith. He'd be the right wing on the second line. You have a ridiculously good second line with Hall, Krejci, and Tarasenko. And then that means that your third line gets better because you drop Craig Smith to the third line with Coyle.
Well, Craig Smith was phenomenal last year in the second line, and that second line was great. But I did say last year that I felt like on a championship team, Craig Smith was a third line player. I kind of rescind that. I do think he could be a top six forward in a cup team. I just think that optimal lines would he be on a third line. As far as Tarasenko goes, look, if I knew the guy could play 82 games in playoffs, fine. That's just such a huge question mark. Like, I don't think that's the case.
How much do you think they would have to retain his contract for the Bruins to consider adding him?
Scott's probably better to answer this
one.
I mean, like, realistically, they're probably not going to retain more than $1 million, so that's probably like the max. And then you're getting him for a $6.5 million cap hit. I just get the sense that the Bruins aren't in on Tarasenko anyways. I think they checked in on him, did a little bit of homework, but then there was a report. I don't remember if it was either Jeremy Rutherford of The Athletic or Andy Strickland from Bally Sports. They're both like St. Louis Blues insiders. I think one of them reported that at some point that the Bruins were no longer in on Tarasenko. Now, I guess it depends on what got them out. Is it they did more homework on the medicals and came to the conclusion that they don't think he's going to bounce back or be the same player? Or is it that the ask from St. Louis was too much? Because if it's the latter, well, that ask can always come down if they're not getting what they expected or hoped for.
And so Tarasenko has the ability to drive down the price because he could say, I'm only going to X, Y, and Z, right? I'm only going to Boston, you know, or another team or two other teams. That means that you're looking for the best deal only from three teams.
Sure. So, I mean, I guess I don't rule it out. You know,
see, I was able to talk Scott into this earlier, too.
I still don't think it's going to happen.
But I was able to make it make more sense.
Yeah.
Right? There is a way it can happen, and that's what makes me excited about it.
I'll say this, Scott. If the, you know, situation came up where it was a trade package revolved around somebody who could have been in the expansion draft and lost for nothing, and Jake DeBrusk, but again, it's kind of like, you know, this is a...
Well,
hypothetical, but it's such a fun hypothetical.
I mean, I could have to for him.
When The Athletic was like doing proposals from, you know, it was like a list of four or five teams that they thought were interested. And this was a couple weeks ago at this point. But their Bruins package was their first round pick, which obviously the draft's gone now, so that's out, and Trent Frederick. And that was it. So it was like, yeah, like I would have done that if I was convinced that he could still physically be the something close to the player he used to be. But who knows? Like, you know, we just don't know what St. Louis is looking for at this point. Would it have to be a first-round pick next year? Is it
probably
a top prospect like Stanika? you know.
See, but his injury problems, I just feel like really dilute his their ability to like ask for stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because everybody and their mother knows he's like a, you know, he's as fragile as Scotch tape right now. Like he's banged up.
So does that help?
It should help. It should help any suitor trying to get Tarasenko, but you know, it's just
Also the fact that they left him exposed in the expansion draft tells you that like
the value is
if they thought there was like some great package out there, they wouldn't expose him and risk losing him for nothing if they thought like they can get a first round pick and a top prospect. Well, so
if you're one of the other 31 teams, you're looking at it and you're talking to St. Louis and you're talking about a guy who has verbally said he doesn't want to play for St. Louis and he has a brutal injury history, then like how can St. Louis sit there and have a leg to stand on? Like they'll get something for him, but you can't get like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
See, that's why I think it's possible.
It is possible. Again, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think the Bruins are.
Don't kill my dream.
Are super.
I know I kill yours sometimes, but I say there's like a 20% chance.
What's going
I'll
on
say
with
3% chance?
What's going on with is it Kirill Kaprizov in Minnesota? What's the latest on him?
Yeah, I haven't really been following super closely. I know there was like a report that he might be going back to Russia or something, but
he was a good player this year.
Yeah, I mean the Wild can't let that happen. Like that should be one of their building blocks going forward. So
the 28th will be very fascinating, and I think a lot of shoes will start to fall then.
So yeah, we can get into the defense now.
You wrote about I got to pull up his name actually. He plays for the Jets.
Derek Forbort.
Thank you. One of my favorite things about Scott is that he puts all the time and energy into write these articles and these blogs, and then he quote tweets it with like a 2-sentence like synopsis of like his actual feelings. And I like to read those the best. Read the whole thing. But I think it's funny because like he has his little snarky comments. And basically, Scott said, "Top four, no. Bottom two, sure, why not?" So I look him up, and a lot of people are like saying, you know, hypothetical pairings with this guy included. All right, let's pump the brakes for a second. The guy was drafted in 2010 or 11, whatever it was, like 10, 11 years ago, and he's been in the league for like 5 years. He is no more than a Jared Tenorti depth guy. This guy is not going to come in and help the Bruins top six.
I think
six
he's a little more than that. I think he can be a regular on your third pairing, and I'd be totally fine with that. Like if you went into next season and your third pairing was Derek Forbort and Connor Clifton, I'd be like, all right, that's probably better than any third pairing you had this season.
Ah.
But the depth.
Honestly, it's like a slice of Sbarro's pizza at the food court. It's okay, like, but it's nothing great.
I don't know if there's a market that is looking at Forbort as like a top four defenseman, because that's the role he's been playing. But he's been playing that on a Winnipeg Jets team that was bad defensively and on several Los Angeles Kings teams that missed the playoffs. So
bring him in.
Is he really a top four defenseman, or does he just play there when the team isn't good enough? Which is what I think. So on any team contending for a cup, he should be a third pairing guy. So if that's what the Bruins are looking at him at, as great, get him for that. But if they're thinking like, oh, maybe, you know, he'll be like the bigger guy we bring in and pair with McAvoy, like that to me kind of just reeks of like the trying Jeremy Lauzon there last year. And it's like, yeah, I mean, I guess because it's Charlie McAvoy, you can probably get by with it, but you're not, he's certainly not making McAvoy better in any way. Like, he's going to be a bit of an anchor on that pairing.
Yeah, I mean, as a depth guy, like, sure, why not? You know, to steal what Scott has kind of preached the last few episodes is, like, I want the Bruins to really improve their defense, and, you know, obviously that more so in their top four, and so, like, Ryan Suter, Brian McCabe, like players like that, like those are players that like I'm focusing on trying to get. Like, you know, we've talked about Matthias Ekholm and stuff like that, but like that's like a trade thing. You know, I'm trying to like who are the guys that can come in and help log those top four minutes for them. Like, you know what I mean?
It's getting thin pretty quickly because Jamie Oleksiak was one of the top left shot free agents. He signed with the Seattle Kraken going into the expansion draft. Alec Martinez would have been. He is reportedly re-signing with Vegas, so take him off the board. Suter is, I think, pretty clearly going to be the top left shot D on the market come Wednesday, and he may not last long. So there were reports Monday that there are teams willing to offer him 4 years, A reminder, Ryan Suter is 36 years old. So that is signing him through his age 40 season. I have liked the idea of getting Ryan Suter on the Bruins. There were reports that they were interested, that they were going to be, quote-unquote, going hard for him. I like him a lot less at 4 years. I don't think that's a particularly smart signing. But what I want to pitch to you guys is, if your cup window is 1 to 2 years and you're going for it, and say you're looking around at other free agents, you're looking around at trade options, and you're going, man, you know what? Ryan Suter really is like the best that's out there right now, and I don't think we can find anything close to that. Do you just say, screw it? If it takes 4 years to get him, we'll give him 4 years and worry about what happens when he's 39 or 40. We're going to worry about that 3 or 4 years from now.
I lean towards yes as my answer, and for a few reasons. First of all, he's consistent. He's been a good player in the league for a long time. You mentioned he's one of the top people available. But they're thinned out in terms of veterans on the defense. And now you're bringing in a veteran defenseman, right? We were getting young. They're getting young. Carlo, Grizzlick, McAvoy. They're all young defensemen, and they've lost the veteran presence on the D in the last 2 years. So I think it's a good move. I think that they could use a veteran on defense. Obviously, you're right, the latter 2 years in his contract, they'd have to worry about it. But if you're an all-in team this year, which we assume they are, and it, all indications are that that's the mindset of management, I might do it.
100%. 100%. It's this simple. 4 years from now, the Bruins will not be a cup champion caliber team. So if Suter's on the team or not, does it matter? What I'm looking at right now is the next 2 years where I know for sure, you know, I still have a very, very... Patrice Bergeron is going to be one of the top centers in the league until the day he decides to hang him up. It's just a matter of when he wants to do that. Like, I don't see him playing and not really having it in the tank. He's never been the fleetest of foot, yet he gets better and better. So the speed aspect doesn't worry me with Bergeron. If I could have Suter and McAvoy for the next 2 years, you know, as a top pairing with in this window, absolutely.
And just
You have to go for it. You have to go for it. They need to be... The Bruins for the next 2 years are the definition of all-in. Like, there's no doubt about it. Don Sweeney has one objective right now. It's to win a Stanley Cup and optimize the roster when he still has, you know, the elite players he does. And then if we have to go through a rough couple of years with, you know, Pastrnak and McAvoy leading the way, and they're kind of a bubble team, fringe year and out, and then they'll eventually get back to it. But you can't be a contender forever, and so you still need to optimize this current window.
And just to make a little bit more of a case for Suter, he's only had one season. Well, he's only had 4 seasons in his very long career where he was minus and plus minus, and the worst being early in his career in the 2009 season when he was a minus 16. But on his career, he has ridiculous plus minus numbers. He's 105 positive, and that's what I mean by he's not a liability back there.
Yeah, and he's generally been on playoff teams, so that helps.
Yeah, that helps, but that's what kind of team he's
going
to be
going
to.
Not playoff teams that have made deep runs,
no.
Mind you, but they've gotten there.
Once again, that's the kind of team he's going to, so it should be a similar fit.
And he stays healthy, which is huge. So this actually ties into another question we got on Twitter, by the way, that we can touch on. Suter has only missed... I believe it was like 12 games in the last 10 years combined. And for a Bruins team that suffered a bajillion injuries on defense last year, just someone who can stay healthy, who knows how to stay healthy, obviously takes care of himself, like, that would be... Just that alone would be big, just to have consistency back there.
Yeah, you're right, because I read our Twitter questions, because Scott posted, like, hey, we're doing a podcast tomorrow. What do you guys want to know about it? And the comments were just like, how?
I have the question here. So from Brian on Twitter, what is your solutions to our fragile D-core? Not their fault, but they are all concussion concerns. How do you keep them safe and effective on the ice?
Sorry, I thought I texted you guys that question.
Can't fix the concussion concerns, right?
So, like, Cam Neely even said this after, like, Cam Neely kind of casually dropped that in his postseason press conference, that the Bruins had 8 concussions on defense this year. We know at least 2 of them were Carlo. I think, you know, you could guess that maybe Tenorti suffered one on that hit from behind by Hathaway.
Yeah, he definitely had one.
But Yeah, and Neil even said, like, at the time, like, I don't know what you do about that. And I kind of took that to mean, I sort of took that as, like, Neely kind of almost sending a message to the league, like, hey, don't you care about head injuries? Like, we had 8 concussions this year, and, you know, like, hey, you got to try to fix this. And get
suspensions for one.
One of them, yeah, Tom Wilson. So, look, I mean, there are things technically that you can work on, whether it's awareness, you know, looking over your shoulder, being in better position to take a hit, communication with the goalie when you're coming back, obviously, like, there's all that stuff you can work on, and they do work on, obviously, but...
But I think the main part of that question, or which also had an opinion in it, was about the depth, and, you know, staying healthy is a variable that you can never fully account for, except for with depth, right? So that becomes the question. When you add Suter, it helps, obviously. You need to add a defenseman.
Yeah,
if they re-sign Riley, that could help as well. They keep Clifton. They lose Lauzon in the expansion draft. I don't know if they're any better off. They're not better off currently.
Definitely not.
But you have, you know, Zboril. You have the same problems right now as last year.
Right.
Unless
is,
you add someone
which
like
is why you, yeah, which is why you need to be targeting, like, a clear top 4 defenseman. And not just Derek Forbort and thinking, like, that's...
You mean adding someone like Jared Tenorti didn't help?
Oh, yeah, we added Derek Forbort, so we should be really good on the defense now this year. We got more depth, 8 concussions last year.
Thanks, Donnie. I love Suter's game. If you watch the way he goes and gets the puck, like, a lot of times... And, Scott, you brought this up last week. It was, how to stay healthy on the back end. And it was like Carlo, a lot of his injuries are bad luck, but a lot of times it's because he's putting himself in a bad situation and a vulnerable situation. And when you watch Ryan Suter, he makes it seem like so easy. Like, he doesn't seem flashy, but he's so good. And a lot of times, like, when he's retrieving a puck, like, he'll look over his shoulder, see he has time, and he'll actually, like, open up and start skating backwards, like, beneath the goal line. Like, the 200-foot surface is always in front of him, and that's something that he can pass along to, like, the McAvoys and the Carlos and Grizzlicks, and they can just learn from that. And I think that having him, it, you know, I just don't think the Bruins should allow term to be a deciding factor as why they shouldn't get him, because, like I said, 4 years from now, they won't be winning a cup, I don't think, and so whether he's on the roster or not doesn't matter. Like, look ahead to the next 2 years and let that be. End of the day, he plays a ton of games, like you said. He stays healthy. The 2022 Olympics are around the corner, and most people will have him in the in Team USA's top 8, right? So he's still one of the best players in the world, certainly American players. And so I'm all for Suter. I think he'd be a great addition. I would hate to see him go to a Eastern competitor too, which would suck.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the Islanders are one of the teams reportedly interested in him. And
that would be very
also
problematic.
You know, they're going to be right there again.
Also, like, people, the Minnesota Wild, although with Kaprizov last year and Jordan Greenway and some other players, Jared Spurgeon, like, they're getting more exciting to watch, I suppose. But for the last, like, 12 years, they've been the most boring team to watch in hockey. Like, they kind of, like, you know...
They always seem to lack just high-end offensive talent. Like,
I used to watch them all the time, and I was just like, this is their year, and then it was never.
But every single season, they'll end up with somewhere between 97 and 105 points to squeak into the 6th or 7th seed and then be a first-round exit.
Yeah, I used to have them going farther in the playoffs, and it almost never happened.
So you have Ryan Suter playing with those caliber players. Put him with Bergeron, Marchand, Pastrnak, Krejci, hopefully, Hall. Go down the list. McAvoy, you know, you're surrounded by better players, and he's already been a phenomenal player in Minnesota, so I just think he'd be even better. I know he's 36, but, I mean, it's Tom Brady's showing that father time can sometimes be delayed.
Yeah.
So,
and I'll throw out another mid-30s veteran option as a backup to Suter if the Bruins get beat out on him or don't go for 4 years or whatever, but Alex Edler, who I think still is, again, obviously not in his prime anymore, but still has something in the tank, was still a pretty good player last year. All the reports are he's going to test free agency. Sounds like he very well could move on from Vancouver. They're, you know, a rebuilding team. He might be looking for a chance to win a cup, so he's out there as well. He's not as good as Suter, but I think Edler could still... I think he can still play a top 4 role and, like, hold his own. he might not stand out. He might not be like, you know, take your top four to another level. But I think he can fit in that role and not, certainly like not hurt you.
Well, here's a question. Is he any better of an option than Mike Riley?
In the playoffs,
maybe,
yes.
Maybe, yeah, because he's more of what the Bruins, I think, want. Like, he's a better defender than Riley, I think. He has a little more size.
But they like the fact that Riley is an offensive-minded puck-handling defenseman.
But I think they know that it's tough having Riley and Grizzlick, especially if those are your top two left-shot defensemen. Like, if those guys are both playing in the top four, and then you have some bigger guys, a depth option behind them, like, that's tough. I think they want someone bigger in their top four. And if they brought Riley back as, like, on the third pairing, I think they'd be fine with that. Like, that'd be great.
Exactly. I think he comes back the third line. Great option for the Bruins.
I mean, I like Riley, but, like, when I think of adding or subtracting players, I don't necessarily think of, like, yeah, like, that fun game in February when the Bruins, like, run away 6-2. I always think of, like, the playoff series, and I think of, like, the Islanders series and the Tampa Bay and the Blues, and, like, you know, those teams that go on deep runs, like, the Mike Rileys of the world do not intimidate them or stop them, but, like, in fact, he'll shy away. But, like, Alex Edler is one of those players, like, he plays that type of, you know, game, and I think of playoff-style hockey, and I like Edler in that situation, too. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. I actually, believe it or not, have faith that Sweeney will give the Bruins a pretty good roster this year. He knows what's at stake. They all do. The whole organization
does. And hopefully he learned from last year as well, where, you know, last year they tried to take a little bit of the cheaper option, you know, give some younger guys a shot, and ended up needing to have, like, the trade deadline of a lifetime just to give the team a chance. Mm-hmm. And you can't bank on having that trade deadline again. Like, you can't bank on a player of Taylor Hall's caliber basically forcing his way to you for a second-round pick in Anders Bjork.
And you're just lucky he decided Boston was where he wanted to go, because at the end of the day, if he decided that there was another team that was a better option, you weren't going to get him.
Vegas was...
So it was up to him, too. It wasn't like...
Toronto was supposedly interested, he was interested in Toronto, they weren't interested in him.
Which didn't work out for them. Right now. That's just Toronto.
Honestly, like, the fact that he chose Boston over Vegas, you know, count your blessings, because you could have looked at Vegas' roster, should have, and said they have a better chance to win a cup. There were just other variables at play for Hall that he wanted to come to Boston.
Yeah, I guess I think he had his mindset on it from the year he was drafted. He seemed like he really took a liking to it when he came to check it out.
Yeah, and especially last offseason. Like, I think it's clear he really wanted to sign with the Bruins last offseason, and the offer just wasn't there, so he took what he could find money-wise. I think with an eye towards, if this doesn't work, I'm going to get traded at the deadline anyways.
Looking at a couple of the questions from listeners on Twitter, because obviously we want to shout them out, because that's why we do
it.
And
we're a little bit, like, towards the end of our podcast, so...
Right, so we'll rattle it off. So, we already kind of talked about the Richie and Kasha thing. It's tough to talk about that until we know further in a free agency. That'll just be addressed then. We'll see what happens to Krejci. Any dark horse candidates from Providence?
Yeah, so one that that I would pick out, and I don't know I don't think it'll be for this year, but maybe keep an eye towards later in the season, is Brady Lyle, who is a bigger right shot defenseman, pretty mobile, and has really emerged as a good player for Providence, kind of out of nowhere. Like, he wasn't drafted, and they signed him out of juniors, and is looking like a player who might. So the Bruins signed him to an entry-level contract last year after a couple of months with Providence, because there were reports that other NHL teams were kind of sniffing around on him and, like, taking notice of him. So that's pretty encouraging. And he is a defenseman that, like, has that size that you're looking for, has a really good shot. Again, I don't expect him to challenge for a roster spot, certainly not right off the bat this year. Maybe not at all season, but could, you know, you look at how many defensemen get injured in any given season. He could get a sniff at some point, and at the very least, I would say he's a dark horse for the future, because he's someone who was on, like, no one's radar, again, wasn't drafted, and could someday be an NHL player for you.
I would say mine would have to be Jack Aschon. He sniffed Boston last year, three games, and they're going to give him a few chances again this year. I think they'll probably give him more than three games this year just to test him out. Like we mentioned, if the D gets thin again, which at some point in the season is obviously likely to happen, Jackishon could have a chance to step up into that role and get a little bit more playing time in the NHL.
I would say Oscar Steen. I liked what I saw of him briefly last year. I look at him as a bottom six guy with energy, but some skill. I think one of the old games he played last year, he shot one off the crossbar with a nice, like, deceptive toe drag in the slot. So it shows that he's willing to make an impact. Kind of reminds me of, like, the kind of player like Yanni Gourde, like, on Tampa, where he's a honey badger and has some skill and can be tough to play against. So I think he's going to challenge for a bottom six role. And then I had one final question for you guys. It's a huge topic in the NHL, and it might go down before our next podcast. So any chance that Jack Eichel gets traded?
Definitely a chance.
Yeah, I mean, people are saying it's going to in the next couple of days here. So
yeah, people have been saying he's going to be traded for months now.
They have.
Yeah, I think it's definitely more likely than not he gets traded this offseason. I just don't think that situation in Buffalo is salvageable. I think they finally came to some sort of agreement on like treatment for his injury, but that took so long. He was already so sour on being there because of how poorly run they've been, how far off they are from being any sort of contender or even making the playoffs. And his no trade clause kicks in after this coming season. So if you're the Sabres, right now you can trade him to anyone. You can be negotiating with every team. After next season, Eichel can narrow it down and really force your hand and maybe do something like Taylor Hall did where it's like you can't get equal return for him.
No, you can't. I mean, they did not want to get Anders Bjork in return for Taylor Hall, but that's what they ended up having to do. But they're Buffalo, right? So you never know if they're going to end up doing the smart thing in that situation and training him now while they can. I think they do, and I think it has to do with that, but even more has to do with the fact that he just does not want to be there, does not want to play there. Taylor Hall mentioned it when he was asked about it when he got to Boston, about the situation and the communication issues and the injury issues and Eichel's desire to be there just isn't there from all accounts from his teammates, from, insider reporting. I don't know why they'd want to keep him there for another year. So it makes the most sense that he's gone.
Well, Minnesota buying out Suter and Parise raised eyebrows. Montreal is linked to him. The Rangers have a ton of assets to give away, a couple of recent high draft picks and some roster players. LA is linked to him. I saw maybe even Anaheim. So we'll see. I would love for it to be Boston, but the Bruins don't have the collateral to bring in Jack Eichel.
No, I think he's off the table.
No team wants what the Bruins have to offer right now, unless, like you said, he forced his hand later on and chose like Boston.
But we're a year out from that situation.
We are. But a story to keep an eye on for sure. I'm good. You guys have anything else?
No,
I think we answered all the questions.
We didn't touch on goaltending at all. I was just going to mention, like, if you're talking to Arizona about Christian Dvorak, you might as well be talking to them about Darcy Kemper, too. We still don't know what's going to happen with Tuukka Rask.
Delayed a surgery.
To me...
That's great.
Yeah, that was so odd, because originally it was supposed to be end of June. Now it's end of July. I don't know what happened
there.
Team
guy.
But Kemper's, like, the exact kind of goalie. If you're going to be looking for a veteran... He's signed for one more year, I think, with like a $4.5 million cap hit. Like, that's perfect. That's exactly what I would want. So, something to keep an eye on. We know there's been enough smoke around the Bruins and the Coyotes that we know like they're at least talking. So, that would be a name to watch when it comes to goalies.
I saw Braden Holtby's name mentioned as well. Former Bruins killer.
Yeah.
Former Stanley Cup champion.
I think I'm probably out on Holtby at this point. It's
not
been,
that
it's
guy.
Been a little bit since he's been particularly good, but.
Yeah, the goaltending situation will be very interesting to follow.
Well, and I assume we're doing another podcast next week, right?
Yes.
We're going to be going through, assessing what the Bruins have or haven't addressed so far at this point in free agency. So we'll be able to talk more about the goaltending situation at that point because the Bruins' top two goaltenders starting last season are both free agents. Questions about Tuukka Rask coming back, what the contract could be if he does come back, will all come up next week.
Yeah, Halak's gone like the wind.
Yeah, he's done. Actually, there was one other question we got on Twitter, and it's a pretty short answer, so we'll throw this in. Is there any chance Jeff Gordon, who, by the way, was on ESPN's draft coverage this weekend, is hired by ownership to transition Sweeney and or Neely out of their roles. Just for people who don't remember, Jeff Gordon was interim GM back in 06 for a few months, but what a few months it was, because he oversaw the draft that got the Bruins Phil Kessel, Brad Marchand, and Milan Lucic, and he was also in charge when they traded Andrew Raycroft for Tuukka Rask. Mm. So, lended you a lot of your core. you know, was mostly recently Rangers GM, got fired after the season.
By the way, he did a great job in New York, right?
I was like,
wasn't he one of the guys that got fired because of the... what happened?
Because their owner's a dumbass, basically.
Yeah, I have heard nothing but bad things.
James
about
Dolan,
that.
Yeah, he's horrible. He's like one of the worst owners in sports, and he's just not patient.
I've heard that the Rangers have harassed some of the reporters who put out stories about them that they don't like.
But what was the story again? Like the Rangers issued a statement. What did they issue a statement again? I forget that story.
Oh well, so that was
Was he one of the guys that got let go after that?
Yeah, and they tried to say there was no connections, but that was...
That's just BS.
So that was after when Tom Wilson attacked Panarin and Buchnevich. The Rangers put out like a extremely strongly worded statement calling for... who's in charge
Paris,
of the players?
George Parros, that's what it Paris. Was. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They called for Parros to resign. And then, like, supposedly, like, ownership didn't really have their bag or whatever.
I mean, the Rangers are well on the way to a great rebuild, and he was a big reason for it. I think... Don Sweeney is going to be given, you know, this year and next year during this window. But I think that the second, you know, the Bruins need to rebuild and restock for real, like when Bergeron's gone and others, I think the Bruins will have to decide if Sweeney's the guy for that. And if not, then yes, maybe UC Gordon come back.
I think the Bruins higher-ups right now are pretty tightly connected. You know, I think ownership really likes Cam Neely and Don Sweeney. I think Cam Neely really likes Don Sweeney. And they're all tied together. Like, they're all attached at the hip right now.
Yeah, they're all frat brothers.
And so, you know, unless it really goes sideways on all of them, like, I think it would be... Unless it got to a point where it was like, hey, you know, the Jacobs come down, it's, hey, Cam, it's you and Don are both gone, or get rid of Don. Like, something like that obviously could split it up, but I think for now they're all pretty much on the same page. Like, I don't think there's much of a struggle among the Bruins front office right now.
All right, so that'll wrap it up for this episode. We'll be back after free agency, so enjoy free agency and keep on enjoying the summer. We'll talk to you guys next week.